Good afternoon, and welcome to a special edition of Open Air to celebrate the International Day of No Self-Hate. And welcome, Jen. Welcome, Ashwini.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Michael.
And this is an opportunity to tell us what you saw with the assignment that went out yesterday with your annual checkup on living a life beyond self-hate. And so, Jen Neshwini, shall we go straight to our callers?
Yes, please. Thank you, Michael.
All right. Here we go. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. This is Mark in Ferndale.
Hey, Mark.
Hi. Actually, the thing that I noticed the most as I was working with this is that finding a pattern of how self-hate arrives, and this pattern that I see is that I'm not getting what I want. Things are not working out the way they're supposed to be. I just get really, really upset because things are not working the way I want them to, and so. That seems to be a familiar pattern.
Mm-hmm. And so, Mark, just clarify this for me. So as you were working with the assignment, what you noticed is how the pattern of self-hate arrives. And would you say that the self-hate in that pattern of seeing how upset one gets when one is not getting what one wants is the identification? And there's an absence of self-hate now when the identification arrives, because what the self-hate part of it would be to get beaten up for getting upset.
Well, that doesn't seem to be as, the beating doesn't seem to be, I don't recognize that.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't feel like I'm getting a beating. I'm upset. Yeah.
Uh-huh. That's wonderful, right? In some senses, that it's an incredible experience if you could get upset and there was nothing wrong with getting upset.
Oh, I get you. Yes. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And then so there's compassion for the person who's going through that process or whatever. The prescription is, okay, well, there's somebody who's upset. Let me be with that person. Rather than, oh my God, there's something wrong, right? Which is such a beautiful demonstration of there's no self-hate.
Thank you. Thank you. I didn't see it that way.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Mark. And let me find our next caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Miriam.
Hey, Miriam.
Hi. Well, where I'm most vulnerable is the middle of the night. When I go to bed, I fall asleep very easily. Mm-hmm. But I'll often wake up either around 1 or 3:30, and what wakes me up is like a bad dream, or not necessarily a bad dream, but something that when I wake up, I'm very angry, very upset. And that critic certainly has a wonderful memory.
Storing it all up, just waiting for the most vulnerable time.
Just waiting for the most vulnerable time. So there's a lot of rage and why is this again, and shut up and leave me alone, and you're the only one who remembers this. And then a few weeks ago,
I was just going to say, so helpful to know where those vulnerabilities are, to see that pattern.
Mm-hmm. And then a few weeks ago, I was out walking. I had my dog, and I had two of my daughter's dogs, and I was just watching them. They were just like scratching through the snow and rolling in whatever they found, which was always something not too pleasant smelling. But it was just watching them, how joyful they were. And then I thought, you know, joy is available if I make myself available to joy. So now when those that critic starts in, it's like, what am I making myself available to? Am I going to make myself available to the critic? Or am I going to make myself available to the joy and the love and the compassion of the moment?
Exactly. Because that's what is, right? That joy and compassion, that's what is. That's what's here when we're here to be with it. Mm-hmm. And so, again, so helpful to know where the vulnerabilities are. That's one of the things I really enjoyed about the assignment as well, because it's like with anything. If I know where I'm most vulnerable to the self-hating messages, then I can set up all the supports for myself. So, you know, I just pictured either a recording or something that you look at, 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning, you reach for it, and you remind yourself that you don't have to go there. You can go to the joy. You can go to the compassion.
And I can go just to the breath of the moment and just say, there's only this, there's only here, there's only now, and this breath.
Wonderful. And what a testament to the training that we've all, very much celebrating the International Day of No Self-Hate, that we know that there's that process that's coming for us. Over time, we begin to find where we're most vulnerable to it, and we have the tools to redirect the attention. It puts all the pieces together. Yeah.
Well, it certainly is a life-saving practice.
Amen.
And I'm very grateful for it.
Me too.
Gosh,
thanks, Miriam. Gosh,
thanks for joining us, Miriam. And we have another caller here. Next caller. Let's try that again. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yes, Frank from Germany.
Hey, Frank.
So, what I saw, the pattern for me with self-hate is the conditioning wants to make me believe that I have to fix the world.
So there's something wrong with the world, and it's your job to fix it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And also to there's always something wrong. So there's always also to there's also a pattern with arrogance. So that now I know the right thing. This awareness practice, the other people, they do it wrong.
Yeah, and I project what you're pointing out there, right, Frank, is that when we see the process of self-hate as something wrong, not enough, that's what it does. It does it about the world. It does it about other people. It does it about you. Everything else is just simply the content of the process of something wrong, not enough. So you have to fix, there's something wrong with the world, you have to fix it, but you're not doing a good job fixing it. There's something wrong with all those people because they're not doing an awareness practice, and they should be doing an awareness practice. There's something wrong with that. That's the arrogance, right? But the process observation is, it's a process of something wrong, not enough, and any kind of content can be put into that process, and it does get put into the process.
Yes, this is also since this week it gets clearer for me that this is a process. This is all it doesn't matter what the content is. Also, I'm just now since a few months more or less in pain, now more in pain, and when I walk outside and I have pain, and I see the trees and I see the beautiful trees. I can. It's up to me to just enjoy it.
Yes. Well, and I, again, Frank, I would project that what your the awareness of the process of something wrong as a process allows for a redirect of attention away from that process. So when we're in the trees and there is consciousness of the beauty of the trees, we can direct our attention to that. And even if I'm in pain while walking, there is the ability to be present to the beauty of the trees and even present to the pain. But what is not there is the process of something wrong, right? Oh, yeah. Whereas the other experience would be, oh, my God, there's something wrong, I'm in pain. I miss the beauty of the trees. I miss being with the person who is in pain. And I miss even being with the pain. All there is the process of something wrong. And as we practice, it becomes clearer and clearer to us that the thing that is unnecessary is the process, is the attention on the process of something wrong.
Yes. Thank you.
I mean, thank you. Isn't that what yes. We all bow in gratitude to that growing ability to stay in awareness and conscious, compassionate awareness than being in the process of self-hate?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Frank.
Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, Frank. And I cannot mute you, Frank, so if you could mute yourself or call back in, that would be great. All right, we have our next caller here. Next caller, you are now. Oh, I'm trying this again. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Sharon in Barbados.
Hey, Sharon.
Hi. Yeah, I look at that comic, and it reminds me of way before I even knew about the program. I think I spotted that it was my thinking that really caused me the most pain and got me in the most trouble. And one of the things I was just to say was, I need a lobotomy.
Yeah.
So, you know, and failing that, of removing that section like they do in the cartoon. Wouldn't it be nice just have it removed, you know?
Exactly. If only there was such a process, yes.
I know. And it's interesting to think about the patterns and so on associated with it. And, you know, like a pattern that I often have, we went out with friends last night. We don't go out that much. The first thing when I wake up in the morning is I'm searching for something I said that was wrong. And I have been doing that for years.
Well, and Sharon, again, with that very original insight that you had, even sounds like even before practice, it isn't actually you scanning for something that you said wrong, is it?
No, but it is part of my conditioned being, you know, my conditioned me.
It's the process of exactly in that last conversation, it's the process of constantly scanning for something wrong. Because that's what gets our attention. That's what creates suffering.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that was the other thing that it came to me was that this scanning, you know, that just habitually going into my head and scanning through my body and in my surrounding and with my husband, you know, is everything okay? That scanning is another habitual pattern.
Yeah. And so with all that, Sharon, doing the assignment, what did you see? What do you notice is possible as you've learned to practice with all of that?
Well, I think mainly because of the practice, I have learned that it is a process and that's not me. And I never used to know that back when I wanted a lobotomy. Yeah. I never used to know that.
Exactly.
There are times when there are some things that are very, very hard to stand up to, you know, and I made a list of those things when I was preparing today. But even those, if I really use my practice, I get out of it so much quicker than I ever used to. And I'm just so grateful for this practice. I mean, the thing is, to think that, oh, that's not real. You know, that's just a bunch of malarkey, you know, but it's, you know, that's just another one of those habitual things that draws me back in.
That's right. And you're so right that knowing that it's a process really sets us on the path, right? Okay, now we have some way to work with it. Because it's so funny, right? You know, we say, like, wouldn't it be great if there actually was, you know, we could go check into the hospital, get that inner critic removed and all's well. But there's a way in which the process that we go through to learn to direct attention, to learn to live in the present moment, really is who it becomes who we are, or it is who we are, right? And so that it's the very process of learning what we're learning in practice that reveals our authenticity that's so magnificent in a way that I'm not sure if we just checked into surgery that we would ever actually encounter that. And so what you're describing of really knowing the process and being able to work with it, and here's that list of things that really gets you. First of all, I'm projecting that list was probably a lot longer when you started practice. But also that piece of even the ones that feel really, really real, they come up, it feels real in the moment, but so quickly you move through it.
Yeah, well, sometimes it takes a little longer. And even this last week, I felt so bad that all that made me feel better was, well, the Buddha said suffering is, you know, and to accept
it, that's
suffering.
Huge. Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's not small, right? That's huge, because essentially you've made a drastic movement in attention there from, again, what was in that very last conversation that we had today. Instead of, oh, I'm suffering and why am I suffering and I know better and this is terrible, you've moved to a place of acceptance. Suffering is. Okay. And that's what's happening right now.
Well, thank you.
That's a very different place to live. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. And thanks for calling
on me. Thank you, Sharon.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, Gosho, bye-bye.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Sharon. And Sharon, I cannot mute you, so if you can call back in or mute yourself.
Sure, no problem.
All right, thank you. All right, next caller here. Give me a second. Oh, here we go. Next caller, you. Would you please introduce yourself?
Apologies, Michael. Yeah, this is Anne from England. Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Jen. Hi, Sangha. I found this little mini workshop really good, and I know it's the place where I'm most vulnerable. It's definitely when I'm tired. Yeah. I can really feel it, and I think ego knows that, so that's when it comes out with its little hooks. But I notice it now, so I will rest more, and I will, if I do feel I'm getting dragged in, I will step back and say, okay, I'm tired, so I just need to maybe remove myself from the situation, go and have a rest. So I very rarely get dragged in now, very rarely.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful.
And what a statement, right? It's only a phantom. It's not. The practice allows us to do that. And I love the specificity of the insight of the cause, right, the tiredness. And I project, right, and the movement that we're making in practice all the time is you're present enough to notice what the incarnation needs. And it is both presence and compassion that antidote the self-hate.
Oh, that's beautiful. Presence and compassion antidote the self-hate. That's amazing.
Yeah, so that in the last conversation that was mentioned, if we had it surgically removed, we might not arrive at either presence or compassion. It's the practice of presence and compassion that allows us to have the attention on the loving kindness that ends suffering.
Yes, Ashwini, and I've been noticing that this week. It's like it's there to, I use it as a reminder, all right, am I in abundance or am I not? Am I in loving kindness or am I not? And it's a constant reminder now rather than being something that pulls me down. It's, I use it as a tool. And it's a good tool.
It's a gift. And you can't see it as a gift till you get to that place.
Yeah, and I think there needs to be, Yeah, yeah, and there needs to be some space and separation from it in order to see it, and rather than be it. And so this week I was really poorly, and I couldn't tell if my, like, I was so dissociated. I think felt like I was, or maybe ego was telling me I was. So I decided, oh, okay, if you're telling me that, that means I need to stop everything for a whole week and just rest. So I did, and I think it got shocked. It just went really quiet. It realized it wasn't going to get anywhere. So I did the Huber Cure all week, and it's been amazing. Yeah, so lots of loving kindness and abundance here. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Go happy. Bye.
You too.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. And let's find our next caller here. All right. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rob in Minnesota.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, Jen. I love this micro workshop. and I had a sort of an observation and a prescription. And the observation is, after lots of years of practice, but after an intense year of lots of workshops, real life and with Sangha, I see that I have a growing confidence that I'm not going to get stuck on anything for very long.
It's so big. Yes.
And it's like stuck in self-hate, stuck in decisions, stuck in the dark room. And that just allows me to relax so much.
Yeah. And Rob, are you saying that in the moment where, you know, the really real thing comes up, that there's an awareness that it's not going to stick around for a long time? Is that available while it's happening?
Yes, yes. I mean,
wow, that is so good.
It's not, that's why I phrased it for long.
Because
sure, there's a period, but it really, you know, just objective observation. It's like, it's not too many moments before I go, you know, don't believe this. This is not really a thing.
Yeah, which is a huge commercial for staying with it, isn't it? Staying with practice over time. Yeah,
it's amazing, and that knowing from experience that that's what happens when conditioning tries to tell stories about the future. It's like, well, I'll be there, and I'm not going to get stuck. No matter what happens, I won't get stuck on it for very long. So, shoo.
Boy, that's incredibly helpful.
So it's just, it is very empowering. And the prescription is basically, it was right straight from the doctor's notes from before, is to let go of assessing whether I'm spending my time, day, life the way I should. So that's my, my practical practice.
Yeah, I love that. That prescription piece is so fun because it's so, you can get so specific with it, right? You could even check in each morning. Like, what particular, do we need to titrate up a little bit on that? Oh, maybe we need a new. Okay, so for today, for right now, the prescription is no assessment on how we're using our time. Nope. And how helpful that is to have that leverage, because if that's a huge way that the voices get you, that's what they're going to try. Because, of course, we each get the voices that are perfectly tailored to what we'll believe. Not because it has anything to do with reality, but because that's what we're vulnerable to.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's good. I like that as a sort of a daily titration of, like, where to set the knob. So thanks to you. Yeah. Thanks to everybody.
Thanks, Rob. Go happy.
And happy day.
Thanks for joining us, Rob. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Dana in Alaska.
Hey, Dana.
Hi, Ashwini. So, this is great. And the first thing that came to me yesterday was pretty much what the last caller was talking about that trust that things just kind of move through if I stay with them. And what I came across as I looked deeper was that I've learned a lot about staying with what I'm calling existential fear. Like, self-hate wants to fix it before I can even feel it and not let me know that it's fear, I guess, so that it can stay. And that what I've really learned is really important and beautiful is letting the human know that I see her while she's afraid. And I think specifically with like my parents getting older or emergencies, like, or with my own health, being able to sit with the fear helps dissipate it, I guess. I mean, it's the same thing about if you can stay with something when it arises, it will pass on its own, as long as it's seen in loving kindness.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you said so much that I hope I can reflect all of the principles or process insights that you brought to that conversation, right? So the first thing that you said is that the self-hate is there to get the attention so that it's a deflection, right? So I am experiencing something, but if my attention is on the self-hate, I don't know what that is. And if I don't know what that is, as we saw in an earlier conversation, there's no way to address it. I have to know what that is in order to be able to address it. And so the first benefit of not attending to self-hate is the ability to see that there is fear. And if there is a seeing of fear, then you can't be afraid, right? Because there's an awareness of it. And if there's an awareness of it, which is what seeing it allows us to face it, as you said, in loving kindness. Because what is there, within quotes, or here with the fear is what exists, right? Not existential fear, but what exists and can counter the fear. And so we get all of the components of practice in that movement. Redirective attention to here now, attention on loving kindness, the loving kindness that can be with the incarnation that is afraid, and the conscious awareness that can see fear is not real. You make all of those movements.
Yes. It's so interesting to see how many different pieces, I mean, not pieces, you know, the process kind of flows naturally with practice.
Right.
Yeah, over time.
And my experience is not I'm making these process movements, right? It's a very rich, I'm afraid. You describe it in the way you experience it, and that's a beautiful description of the embodiment of those movements. And the reflection in the process allows us to see how practice assists us, or the training that we've done is assisting us to make those movements in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And yeah. Okay. Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Dana. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
This is Anna in Lviv.
Hey, Anna.
Hey, happy International Day of No Self-Hate.
And to you as well.
I've had the most glorious time practicing with the prescription. Thank you to the medical facility for sending it out.
Exactly. For that reminder that it's time for our annual checkup.
Mm-hmm. And it was just so gratefully received, and it was just such a palpable sense of practicing no self-hate as a gift to the guide, that gift of love, that offering. And it just, yeah, it just deepens the commitment, and it's been really fun.
What a beautiful description of it, that really having that, you know, everything everyone's been talking about on the call so far, receiving the miracle of the process, of the information, of the tools that we have, as such an expression of love and so much gratitude that we encountered it.
Exactly so. And it was so beautiful that my day was kind of already underway yesterday with the time difference before the appointment came in, and I read it and saw that one of the suggestions, it was planting a garden, and I had been assisting planting a garden day and doing it in the process of no self-hate. And
And you knew, I'm sure, that you were living a parallel life to those at a Longview farm doing the very thing, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it really is such a, you know, things like that, we were talking about that yesterday, that just, you know, bring us here, you know, feet on the ground, hands in the earth, you know, the birds, the sunshine, the clouds, you know, all of it, just that reminder of, to bring the attention here, as so many people have said so far in the conversation, where that's where the joy is, that's where the compassion lives, that's where loving kindness is, that's where all the things we always talk about in practice, that's what's here in this moment. And that's the antidote to those voices constantly wanting to bring our attention away.
Absolutely. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Anna.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi. This is Anna from England.
Hi, Anna.
Hello. Hi. Hi. Likewise, thank you for this. These activities. I really enjoyed them, and I too planted a garden by coincidence and completely out of the blue. I was given a gift of lots of small plants, sort of alpine plants, and I planted up a small container with them all, with the attitude of unconditional love for myself and for the world. And it was really interesting because it created not necessarily the right word, but it created that there was more meaning, or there was more connection, that the whole thing about planting the mini garden was a lot bigger than it would have been.
I know exactly what you're pointing at, and it's so difficult to express, because at one level, it could be simply planting a garden, which is wonderful in itself, right?
Yes.
And then at the next level, if we look at it as, okay, this is life, right? Planting a garden is so symbolic and emblematic of being in such intimate relationship with the intelligence that animates. It's wonder, it's something from nothing coming into existence, and life in its most primal form that we're interacting with, which, if we're not conscious, just gives us the benefit of being in relationship to that vibration, right? And then when there's conscious awareness of all of that, I'm doing it as part of my practice. I'm doing it because I love the practice. I'm doing it as a gift for the guide, because gratitude wants to give. Now, they're just, I mean, the dimensions of the same activity just deepens. And to me, that's such a metaphor for practicing with being in intimacy with the intelligence that animates. The more we are with it, the more layers that fall away, the more of its essence is revealed, and the more we're vibrating with it as it is, because it is what we are.
Yes, yes, entirely. Yes. That attitude that I planted up the flowers with, the plants with, I can bring to everything in my life, and it just is it. It's really being alive. Absolutely. So thank you so much. Thank you.
I just want to underline that.
Yes.
Anna, because that's what it is, right? It's really being alive. We get it.
Yes.
Compassionate comprehension that dissipates delusion, because there's an immediacy to it, which is what living is. I'm alive to life.
Yes, 100%.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anna. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, my name is Lisa from Bishop.
Hey, Lisa.
Hi. I really got a lot out of this exercise. I really appreciate it. So I'm noticing a lot more balance in my life and not so many ups and downs. The experience of living beyond self-hate is more joyous, more grateful, more open, more available for other opportunities in life, and not so controlled by imagined guidelines or structures. So there are moments still of self-hate, flashbacks, but not controlling my life to such an extreme amount. And they're not as deep or long as before. The patterns I notice is usually when I do something wrong, or what I perceive as wrong.
Or what the voice is called wrong.
That goes wrong, and I blame myself, you know.
Or you get blamed, right?
Right. And problems with relationships. The prescription is acceptance, I think, for me. Yeah. Acceptance that I'm human and mistakes happen, and just look for the remedy. It's not a disaster or the end of the world.
And I don't know, that's so also beautifully articulated, Lisa. And I don't know if you've been around long enough to, I guess it was, I don't know, two summers ago, and we talk about it, it comes up frequently in practice, but we were really focused on it for a while, is realizing that everything that happens in our lives is for our awakening. And so that place where, you know, I remember when I was first practicing, Sherry would often say, there's no such thing as a mistake. And it's like, what? I mean, come on, like, I can name dozens of them probably just from today, right? But then realizing, gosh, but actually those really are my best opportunity. Those are showing me things. There's all kind of, when a quote mistake happens, there's all kinds of information in that for me. You know, I see where I'm vulnerable to self-hate, and all these beliefs and assumptions are revealed. You know, all these things happen. And so I love what you got to, that acceptance is really the best prescription for all of it. Because with acceptance, instead of constantly trying to make sure that I don't make mistakes, and I do the right thing, and I don't do the wrong thing, or that life goes the way, which is, you use the word control, perfect description, right? That's what ego wants us to believe, is that we can control life, which of course we cannot. And so that's an absolute lock for suffering. But with that acceptance, everything becomes open of, okay, this is what is. Now I can practice. I can practice being here. I can see how it all works. As people are talking about, I can start to see the patterns. And once I start to see that, I can really practice being here in that acceptance.
Yes, that makes so much sense. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And wonderful how you know, another phrase we often use in practice is the more you give, the more you get. And so doing that assignment on such a detailed level and seeing all those things, that's how our practice takes off, right? When we actually do
right.
the assignments and we get to see so much.
Right, yeah. Yeah, but it was really great to see that. I was surprised.
Yeah, it is. I know. I love it. Yeah, it's so great. You know, you look at something, the voice, at least for me, the voice will often say, yeah, I mean, I know. Such a different experience than sitting down and actually doing the exercise. And then invariably, every time something new comes out of it, I see something else that I haven't seen before or see it in a new way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Margaret, also from
Margaret.
California.
Hi. Hey, Margaret.
Well, I'm very happy to be here. One of the ways that really is getting me in the moment is having like swirling, what I would say, emotional or, you know, like sensations in the body. And of course, it just, you know, or pain in my body, that's one thing too. And it can draw the attention of self-hate, basically promoting the message of there's something wrong, I got to do something different, mm-hmm. you know, other than just being present mm-hmm. to it.
Yes, yes. So I love the way you phrased it, because it's so insightful. It can get me about anything. Right now, it's getting me about the pain in my body, the sensation of discomfort or pain, which is what it's using as the content of the something wrong process. Right? There's so much clarity when we say it that way, because we know what it is, we know what the process is, we know what the content is, we know that we're observing it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And so then you can, and the other thing that you said, Margaret, which I think is so nuanced, is the conversation becomes, oh, well, what's wrong with that? I need to fix it. We need to change it. It's uncomfortable. And that is still the dialogue of the self-hating process. Whereas if we're not trained in awareness, we would believe the sensation is what's wrong and the conversation is the prescription, rather than... The conversation is also part of what's wrong, and what the prescription is, the acceptance or being with it, and then redirecting the attention to receive the information of what to do if there's anything to do about it.
Yeah, and so as you're reflecting that back, what I'm recalling is that I really upped my current practice, or the practice of the using the alarms to come back here, and for a long time now, there's been just lots of resistance to really doing fully doing the assignments, or just a lot of resistance, especially in the moment. So what I've added to that practice of the alarms is my goal and focus is to notice that little resistance voice that comes in, you know, just outside of the alarms anytime during the day. It's, where like, oh, it's too late for me to get on for meditation in the morning. You know, like this morning, I woke up 15 minutes before it started, and I could easily just say, nah, I'll do it later. And so what I'm doing is that whenever I catch it and do the thing that I really want to do, is I'm making little tally marks of celebration.
And the importance of that
cannot be overstated, right, Margaret? Because what do we say? One process does not lead to another, right? So if I'm in the process of I don't want to, I don't feel like it, and that's what I'm used to, we wake up one day without being able to do anything else.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That's what practice is, that I notice that voice, which is a self-hating voice, because it does not want you to do the thing that you want to do, because it's taking away your life force. It is, in every way that we could describe it as self-hating, it's anti-authenticity, right? So here I am, I want to wake up and I want to meditate. And even though I have 15 minutes before meditation starts, it wants to say it's too late. Don't do that. And if it has enough energy because it has been attended to, it's going to take a huge level of energy to get past it, which is why in every moment that we notice it, where there's a moment of awareness, it becomes a practice to antidote it, to create that other groove and make that groove of the life force available to me. Otherwise, I lose it.
Yes. Yes. And so it's been very eye-opening just to, expand awareness throughout my entire day to where I, you know, to notice resistance or, you know, just the perhaps more subtle, ways that the inner critic and self-hate and something's wrong, like typically would, just control my life.
Mm-hmm. And I love that because it is nuanced. The more obvious thing is, don't get on, it's too late, Margaret, let's not get on that. It doesn't speak as to you, right? Oh gosh, it's too late, I don't feel like it, I'm not going to do meditation. 5 minutes after you remember that you didn't meditate, the self-hate is, what's wrong with you, Margaret? What kind of a practitioner are you that you can't meditate, right?
That's right, you should have been. You could have done it.
You could have done it. That's the most more obvious form. But as we get past the more obvious forms, you're catching on to the more subtle forms, and those are deadly because they can go unnoticed. And so to bring it into the light of conscious awareness, and again, the love that brings it to our attention, right? You didn't, it's like, oh, I'm doing the alarms. Then I notice I'm not doing the alarms. And now I notice that I need something to support me to do the alarms. There's so much compassion that is operating, that is unseen, that brings into the light of conscious awareness what I'm not doing. And when we become conscious of that, we realize that's also operating, not just the self-hate.
Yeah, the other way of up my practice is to, because there's been a lot of resistance to getting in the queue, and so this, I'm coupling this with the Commitment Buddies program, is to, whenever I'm participating in practice over, you know, the phone, I am getting in the queue.
There it is, uncompromising stand for compassion.
Yeah, and I have not been able to be in that place up until now. So I'm very grateful.
Much to celebrate.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Margaret. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. This is Todd on Gabriola Island.
Hey, Todd.
Hey, Jen. This is something that's been great. I love it that it's coming up annually to do the check-in. It reveals a lot about conditioning can and cannot do. And what I realize is I get a sense that kind of like a cancerous tumor, initially, it's really massive and it's just dominating your whole health system. And then through the decades of practice and staying, participating and committing to as much practice as I can, I get a sense that most of that has been removed, the majority. And what little traces are left of it The antidote Ashwini has been referring to constantly this morning, which I love, is from time to time I'll hear some self-criticism. And right away, the mentor comes in with, that's okay. I'm here. I love you. Don't worry about it. You know, like, you're not an idiot. You're not stupid. You couldn't have known.
Yeah. Boy, isn't that amazing to see that skill has become so ingrained. It's so a part
right.
of your awareness now that comes up when you know, as you were talking about that image of, you know, this huge cancerous tumor, I was picturing how not only is it perhaps the dominant physical experience when
yeah.
something like that happens, but we become so focused on, oh my gosh, I have cancer and this, and, you know, it takes up my whole entire life, right?
Yes,
and everything
yes.
gets turned towards it, and it's kind of controlling my whole experience. And then, you know, there are all the ways we address it. And as you say, in the image, like, it shrinks down, right? And now I'm living with it. And
yeah.
there's a way in which, you know, back to everything is a gift, that the gift is it requires us to take really good care of the human being. I remember years ago joking with one of my doctors, you know, I can't eat any sugar at all. And she said, good. I was like, I know, but... And so just that place of, we're required to take such good care of the human. So when you know where those vulnerable places are, when it comes up, you've got those messages, you've got those tools ready to go to take care of him.
Yeah. And it's so beautiful. It comes up in recording listening, especially the two-handed, where you have this, you know, we talk about the mentor. It's almost difficult to talk about it because it's authentic nature and all those things and we're pointing to, right? But
mm-hmm.
it's like somebody who knows me better than anyone can know me and has my back no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what,
mm-hmm.
if I become unskillful
mm-hmm.
or I fall in a hole
mm-hmm.
or I go
mm-hmm.
unconscious, the mentor
mm-hmm.
is so loving, kindness, compassion, acceptance,
mm-hmm.
non-judgmental.
Mm-hmm.
And it just always, I through this practice, I always
mm-hmm.
feel supported. Always.
Mm.
And then
mm.
the mentorship, it kind of grows out like, you know, you hit a pebble in this pond and there's all those ripples. That would be like all of practice, Sangha, the guide, you know, the privileged environment. That would be the
mm-hmm.
whole container is all held in.
Yeah. Gosh, Todd, you just really added such an important part to the discussion that, you know, as human beings, we're so conditioned to think out there is what I need, right? That's
yeah.
gonna, some person's gonna fix me, some thing's gonna fix me. As soon
100%.
As I, if I could just, right?
Yeah.
And the thing that, the gift that practice does for us is we realize it's within each of us. We have that. You know, you talked about RL, you know, touching in with the mentor. And
yeah.
one of the things, the great gift that practice does for us is to mirror for us
yes.
what we know is possible and to turn us inward towards ourselves where it actually lives.
Exactly. And one of the core facets of practice that I love is that we each and every one of us are our own life.
Mm.
We're
You're
adequate
breaking up
to
a little.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, it's the Wi-Fi. We're adequate to our own life experience in the sense of we
yes.
can,
yes.
we have all
yes.
the internal tools to end
yes.
suffering in this lifetime, guided
yes.
by the Buddha in practice.
Yeah, Exactly so. Mm.
So grateful. Thank you, Jen.
So grateful. Thank you, Todd.
Thanks for joining us, Todd. And we are getting near the end. I think we might have time for one more caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Sri Devi.
Hey, Sri Devi.
Hi. It was so much fun getting the assignment because when I opened it up to read it, I was like, oh, yeah, we have the surgery. I completely forgot about it. And so that was really
mm-hmm.
fun
mm-hmm.
to kind of to actually go, oh, yeah, we have the surgery. And then as I was doing the interview exercise, one of the things that I saw that had never really completely seen before of a place of vulnerability was comparison and standards. And that was just so helpful to see of just like, oh, there's this very, very common pattern that I see in how it gets me. And it was just really lovely, actually, to see that. And then when I got to the part of kind of reporting back, I think one of the things that I've really appreciated, that I've really seen, especially in this last year where I've been really upping my practice, is I had a belief for a really long time that I didn't really know I had, that I had to end suffering forever, end self-hate forever. Everything had to be like, so if I ever experienced it again, I was doing something wrong. And what I've really come to is I don't have to do anything forever. I just have to be here in this moment with all the love and compassion I can bring into this moment, and that is all that's required of me.
Well, so two critical process insights, right? One is the source of self-hate, the pattern. You know, you could say I'm just pulling metaphors or comparisons out, right? I wish I was as tall as that person, or I wish I had that other person's life, or I wish I had this physical characteristics. That's what's really wrong with me. That's the way we experience it. But to see comparison as the process is quite lovely, because it abstracts it from the content of experience and points it at the process. So to be able to finally get, oh, that's what it's about. That's the pattern that gets me, rather than I am the pattern. That's just a phenomenal transformation, isn't it? The ability to see it that way.
Yeah.
And then the second one being, oh, the way the content of within quotes, ending suffering is used by self-hate is you have to end it forever. So if in this moment you haven't ended it, that means you're doing practice wrong. Because if you were the good right person and doing it right, comparison again, you wouldn't be suffering. To catch on to that and realize that all we're ever practicing is presence, loving kindness, presence, then if I'm not, I need to redirect to that. If I am, I'm going to redirect to that. There's nothing wrong with the fact that the process is a moment-by-moment experience.
Yeah, and it's actually incredibly relieving because I don't have to figure anything out forever. I just have to be here right now. That's it.
And so we can, really, yeah, what is ever, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sri Devi. Michael, did I lose you?
Sorry, I was on mute there. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad to invite Sherry Huber to our show. Welcome, Sherry.
Well, thank you, Michael. It's been a delight to be here, an absolute delight. And I was looking at two things that I wasn't planning on this, but I have been so inspired by the conversation that I had two things that I wanted to talk about for myself. So, you know, it's like 50 years ago, driving back from a group where I was teaching folks to meditate and being just brutalized by self-hating voices in my head that I didn't know what they were, and the insight dropped in about what this was and the realization of the power of it and what self-hate does to people's lives and the suffering that it causes. And of course that set me off on, you know, the trajectory practice that has been my life, for which I am just monumentally grateful. And the thing that I heard in the call, two things that I heard in the call today, is people talking about the power of overcoming resistance. Right, I'm going to talk to Ashwini about, I know we do resistance workshops with some regularity. I think we can't do them too often, because the realization of the relationship between self-hatred and resistance, that the way we're controlled is through that I don't want to, I don't feel like it, believing that that's who we are, and not recognizing that it is the self-hate that is sucking the joy, the life out of our life. And people emphasizing what has happened in their lives by sticking with it, by staying with practice and taking step after step after step as the clarity is revealed, and as they we realize what we are, who we are, and that the suffering is unnecessary. It has nothing to do with us and what's possible for us in life when we recognize that. So that's one piece of it. And the other piece that I was just struck by is being in so many conversations with people, of course, especially in the United States, about the condition of the world and our particular contribution to it, and the kind of the level of despair about that that happens. And being with Sangha this morning and hearing from people in Canada, in Germany, Barbados, England, and Ukraine, that in all these places around the world, people are practicing, doing a really sincere practice of ending self-hatred, of bringing loving kindness and compassion into their lives and letting that spread, right? So we talk sometimes about the 4%, and I don't know who will find this, but I love it, that 4% of the population of the world is keeping the 96% afloat. And to realize that all over the world, people, and this is just our song, this is just the people that we know and practice with, and that there are people all over the world practicing in this way and turning away from self-hatred that results in other hatred and all of the suffering that ensues from that, and bringing loving kindness and attention and compassion and caring into their lives and the lives of the people around them, and then letting that vibration just spread out from there. And so I don't know, I feel so heartened by that, so grateful to know that. So grateful that it's happening, yes, but so grateful to know that and to be able to remember that, and that each one of us is doing our part to make the difference that we know is possible, not just for our lives, but in the life of all. So I appreciate it. I'm very grateful. So thank you, Michael. Thank you, Ashwini. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Sherry. And go happy.
Thank you, Sherry. Go happy. Thank you.
Go happy.